KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Hello there, Jim Williams with you today on ABQ Connect. Thank you for joining us. Want to mention to you, if you would go to klyt.fm, even if you don't do it if you're in your car. I don't want you to do it on your phone. Be stopped, be at your house, be somewhere. Go to klyt.fm and click on the Christmas Critter campaign. This is a lot of fun, number one, but it really is an amazing way for us to give a gift for Christmas, but also to help a family in South Asia or in Africa through GFA World to have a sustainable way of making a living. I mean, buy a couple chickens for $15, and the chickens produce eggs like crazy. I've got some friends that live just in Albuquerque, and they don't have a rooster, so the rooster's not waking anybody up. But they have so many eggs just having a chicken coop in their backyard that they can supply like four or five families for eggs. I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing, like in South Asia, where families can earn a way to sustain themselves and bring family members in. And it's just an amazing thing. There's water filters, there's water buffaloes, there's Jesus wells. Waterborne illness in these countries is just unbelievable. So to have a reliable source of water where somebody doesn't have to walk 20 miles to get it every day is just an amazing blessing. So if you would consider participating in the Christmas Critter campaign, we'd appreciate it, and it will bless a lot of people. My friend Jennifer Bryant is in studio, Nourish Nutrition Counseling. You're nodding your head about the egg thing.
I love eggs. What a great source of protein.
It is, but I don't have this on my list, but I see things all the time about, oh, well, if you have high cholesterol, you shouldn't eat eggs. And then there's others going, well, if you have high cholesterol, eggs don't affect it. Which of those is true?
I know. We get that with a lot of things, right? The same question comes up with salt. There's been butter, you know, the butter margarine debate, all of these things, right? My go-to is always everything in moderation. So if you're eating, you know, like a dozen eggs a day, that's probably a little too much, you know, but to say you should never eat eggs, well, that's kind of silly too. So having, you know, having, I don't know, six a week.
Well, totally I want to let everybody know, nourishednutritioncounseling.com is Jennifer Bryant's website. A lot of valuable information, especially under helpful tools. She has a newsletter called Food and Faith to Fuel Your Health, free asset. What are you doing in Food and Faith right now? Yeah. That'll come to you weekly, bi-weekly?
It's bi-weekly right now, so twice a month. We just finished a series on success. So what does success look like from a biblical perspective? And then we're nearing the end of that series. So what I'm doing is I'm sharing some success stories.
Is that different than success meaning I just lost 25 pounds?
Yeah,
and I'm going to gain back 50?
I think so, yeah. I think that is different. It's all about how your mindset is, right? Mm. So, and then, you know, there's also that connection of weight loss doesn't always mean better health. So we want to just be a little bit careful about how are we defining success. And really the way I think about it is, I think the Lord wants us to take care of our bodies. So for some people, that might mean trying to lose a little bit of weight. For some people, that might actually mean gaining some weight, right?
Right.
So I think it obviously just depends a little bit on the
situation. Now, honestly, have you had clients that you looked at, man or woman, and you thought in your mind, you're too skinny?
Yeah.
And you need to gain some weight.
Yeah. I actually have, two right now that is specifically what we're working on. Yeah.
And you're not asking them, though, to gain fat. You want them to get a little exercise, work out a little bit, get some muscle.
So in one of the situations, actually both of the situations, I honestly don't care what kind of weight it is. They're both dangerously low weight. Mm. The one we started, I didn't actually care at all what she was eating. I wanted to get the most calories in her as quickly as possible because she was really at a dangerously low weight. She's a younger girl. In her early 20s. And then my other woman, she's in her late 70s. And again, in your 78, 79, I want you to have some strength. But honestly, the most important thing is just that we put 5 to 10 pounds on.
I have three daughters. There are some chemistry issues that women face when their body fat gets too low.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. And that was actually one of the main motivations for my younger gal was, you know, we need to get those hormones back on track. Like, this is a sign that your body is really not healthy right now. And so let's put on some weight.
Jennifer, tell us, what is a registered dietitian nutritionist?
Well, that is what I am. So that is my credential. And actually this coming year, 2026, is my 20th year as a registered dietitian, which I think is crazy. I can't believe it's been that long. But so being a registered dietitian nutritionist requires an undergraduate degree in an accredited nutrition program, followed by a master's degree in an accredited nutrition program. That master's degree program includes a year-long internship where you're actually practicing your skills. Usually it's done through a university. Usually you're working at the university hospital for a little bit. Maybe you're doing some community nutrition education. You can be placed in different areas. And then once you're finished with that master's degree and internship, then you can take your exam. And then after that, we're required to do 15 hours of continuing education every year. And we have to renew our credentials every 5 years.
That's interesting. What's the focus of your practice and how do you incorporate faith?
Yeah, good question. So about, actually November is my 8 years of owning Nourished Nutrition Counseling. And that was why I started it. I really wanted to find a way to help people understand how they can do the nutrition science part of it, but include some of the principles from the Bible. So what I mean by that is I think the Bible really clearly talks about why we should take care of our bodies, so like our motivation, and also our attitudes about all of it. So how we can think about it, how we should feel about it. So rather than being jealous and angry and frustrated, we are joyful and peaceful. And we have freedom in what we can do, right? So there's a total difference in attitude when you think about a Christian perspective. And so I really wanted to put those two together because I really felt like working with people, I had seen my Christian friends, when they apply biblical principles, they do better. They have more success.
Well, I can't help but point out, It's not hard for people to understand a biblical concept. They might not have ever read the Bible, but they have in their brain, yeah, if I read something in the Bible, it would give me principles for living. That's actually not a complicated thing.
Right.
The Bible's not hard to understand. You just have to spend a little time, kind of like getting to know somebody.
Yeah.
So that's why we call it a relationship with God, that the Word takes you in. But, and I'm going to skip way down my list here, the alternatives are coming at us from every angle,
right?
Particularly social media.
Right.
That's really dangerous. Is it more dangerous for young people or older people?
I think younger people are more on social media. Mm-hmm. So my kids tell me all the time, Facebook is for old people, Mom. But I'm on Facebook, So evidently I'm old, but that's okay with me. I think young people do spend a lot more time on social media in general. And so I am battling that with some of my clients for sure. I think the biggest thing to watch out for on social media, and this is true on any platform. I don't care what it is, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. The whole goal is to make you unsatisfied with something. And so I think a lot of times what that ends up being is you're unsatisfied with your body, the way you look, maybe what you're eating, something. And so it kind of sows these seeds of discontent. Right. So I think we really just need to watch out for that. A lot of times that discontent will then turn into some sort of unhealthy behavior. So I think with young people in particular, that's something I'm constantly trying to correct. Sometimes we'll do like a social media fast if it's really a problem.
Yeah. And I will tell you, I raised 5 kids. But I didn't really have the social media thing. When I first started them with cell phones, we did that primarily so they could get in touch with us. But they were flip phones and stuff. There was no access to social media. So I can't even imagine being a parent today. I want to ask you, because I think that later on in the program today, we're going to talk about how we compare ourselves to other people. Mm-hmm. Social media does that, makes you dissatisfied with how you look compared to somebody else. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But how do you define an eating disorder?
Yeah, I actually just looked it up because I thought that was a really good question. So an eating disorder is a persistent disturbance of eating behavior and impairment of mental or physical health. So it's persistent, first of all. So it's going on for a little while, right? And then it's a disturbance of eating behavior. So that kind of requires us to think about what is normal eating. And I think an easy way to define that might be something like we're eating to maintain a healthy weight for our body in a regular way based on what our body is telling us. So we're eating when we're hungry, we're stopping when we're full. And I think a lot of times eating disorders start when we stop listening to our bodies.
Well, you have personal experience with an eating disorder?
Not exactly. I was never diagnosed. So what I tell people is late in high school, most of the way through college, and then even early a couple of years into my marriage, I had what I call disordered eating. So it wasn't as severe enough to really impact my physical health significantly or my mental health, but it wasn't normal. So I think this is actually a really common pattern that people get into where they become dissatisfied with something in their body. So kind of like what we were just talking about on social media. And so you get this message coming into your mind somehow that you need to change something. And so you decide to go on a diet. You decide to restrict carbohydrates. You decide to change something. And that usually leads to your body kind of going into starvation mode. And the body is very good at fighting that starvation mode. So what it will do is it will increase your appetite. It will give you cravings. And you can only say no to that for so long, right? So you restrict, then you end up overeating. Then you end up feeling really guilty about it. Then you decide, I'm going to start again tomorrow. And then the cycle starts all over again. And so I was really stuck in that cycle where I was constantly trying to lose a few pounds, but then that led to me overeating, and then I would feel really guilty, and then I would undereat again, and then I would overeat again. And so it's this vicious cycle that is really hard to break.
I love that you are addressing personally what you dealt with, because I think there's people listening right now that no doubt have been through that same cycle.
Yeah, I think it's actually really common.
And you've said at one time, I can't remember the data that you shared, but the majority of diets fail.
Oh, yeah.
For everybody.
Yes. Yes. And that's why. Exactly what I just described is why. Because if you're doing something extreme like that, the body really fights back. It doesn't like that. It tries to preserve itself at all costs. And that ends up leaving us feel like we failed. And it's like, we didn't do anything wrong. It was that diet that was too restrictive.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Jennifer Bryan is with us. She is a registered nutrition dietitian or dietitian nutritionist, RDN. I always ask you about those initials. You're also a certified diabetes educator, which we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes. Her website is called nourishnutritioncounseling.com. Lots more with Jennifer coming up. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Thank you for listening to ABQ Connect. Jennifer Bryant with NurseNutritionCounseling.com is in studio with us. Jennifer, you provide a free newsletter. If people go to your website, that's sent out biweekly, all kinds of different information. Do you have the next series planned for that?
I don't. You know, this one's going to take me through December. So in January, I'm kind of brainstorming ideas right now, but I always love doing a short series in January talking about why you shouldn't go on a diet.
Now, when you say go on a diet, you should have a lifestyle of eating.
Sure. Yes. The problem is in January, when people try to go on a diet, they try to do something usually pretty extreme. And so...
Is that because of the way we eat in November and December?
I do think so. Yes. I think that's part of it. So back to that cycle I was just talking about, right? We like end up feeling super guilty after the holidays. And so we try to do something super restrictive and it's just not sustainable. So it just doesn't, it doesn't last.
This isn't on my list of questions, but I'm thinking about it because I see so many women that I totally admire. Moms like you, single moms, professional women, just doing 8 million things. Uh-huh. Like I think about my daughter and she's coaching a dance team and raising three kids and working at Sandia. And I mean, I'm just amazed by all of that. So people seem like they're really in fellowship when they're that busy and around a lot of people. But I also think, and I believe this is true with women especially, they get so busy and are such servants and want to take care of their families at such a high degree that they really isolate themselves. Mm. So the stuff we've talked about, worrying about your weight mm-hmm. and different things, they're kind of dealing with that on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's also a lot of people don't, they don't feel comfortable talking about it. I think it's kind of one of those things where it's like we try to deal with it on our own. And so we just don't, we don't talk about it. And I think the other reason for that is because there is generally a lot of guilt and shame associated with just our bodies in general, but also maybe our eating habits. And so people have trouble talking about it. And I think that's one of the, that's one of the joys of my job is I get to really share with people that like they're not alone. A lot of the things that they're struggling with are things a lot of people struggle with. And so when you talk to somebody about it, that can actually be really helpful, right? Because then you feel like you have a partner. You feel like you have someone that can be walking alongside you.
Here's something that I wanted to share with everybody that I did over the weekend because I knew we were, you were coming in today, is I went to the website, nursenutritioncounseling.com, and I went to helpful tools. And then I clicked on recipes, and I specifically loaded one that was gluten-free. Mm, mm-hmm. And I didn't expect this, but I'm kind of glad I did. It's kind of like a one-dish meal, all the vegetables and everything. It's chicken and sausage jambalaya. And you provide these kinds of recipes with everything you need for free. And they're kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started doing that. One of my clients, when I first started my website, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, they asked me, what do you eat? And I was like, oh, that's a great question. Like, I'm happy to share what I eat. And so I just kind of started putting up some of the recipes that me and my family eat on my website. And so they're usually very simple, you know, 30 minutes or less. A lot of them are, you know, everything is in one dish, the carbohydrate, the protein, the vegetables, all of it's together. And they're recipes that my kids like.
Yeah. Which,
so that's saying something, you know, it probably means they're all right.
So I don't know if I'll make this correlation the way I'd intend it, but I retired from banking. I was primarily a construction lender, both commercial and residential. And not a lot of people loan money for construction. A lot of people do like permanent loans and those kind of things, but I really like the construction stuff. Well, in the 35 years that I did that, I had amazing contractors building amazing structures and doing all of that. But very few of those people, and some will be mad at me for saying this, could balance their checkbook.
Mm.
Now, yeah. A lot of people listening don't even know what balance your checkbook means because that's not that much of a thing now. It's kind of all done online for you, right? But it required some financial planning. And so I want to correlate that with a lot of people think financial planning is really, really hard and complicated. But I'm talking now about meal planning. Mm-hmm. Is meal planning complicated?
I think people make it more complicated than it needs to be. And I think the term meal planning, I think, scares people. So I love teaching classes on meal planning because I think it's one of the most important skills that you can develop when you're, you know, cooking for a family. And it really doesn't have to be complicated. There are so many benefits with saving money, saving time, limiting food waste. I mean, you name it, it's a benefit.
So it does save you money.
Oh, 100%. Yes. It also reduces stress. So if you have a plan, you don't have to be thinking about, oh my goodness, what am I going to put on the table for dinner tonight? You know, it's already planned out, so you don't have to stress about it. But yeah, I usually just, I pick a handful of recipes every week. I make sure I have the groceries, and that's my meal plan. Like, it takes me, I think, total maybe about 30 minutes to plan my meals and put in my grocery order.
Is this a silly question? Whenever you meal plan and you put together something for your family, there's a little bit of leftovers.
Yeah.
If you've done it right, there's not a ton of leftovers. Right. There's a little bit of leftovers.
Yeah.
I always feel bad when that goes to waste.
We usually use it for lunch. Lunch okay. is the next day. So my husband will take a lunch. I'll eat a lunch. You know, I work from home. So I'll eat a lunch at home. There is not as much leftovers now that my son is 15. I find myself having to cook more than I did 5 years ago, for sure. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, sometimes I even think, even if I do waste that extra serving, maybe we just had a busy week and nobody got around to eating it for lunch. That meal was still a quarter of the price of what it would have been if we ate out, even if there was a little bit of waste. So it's still a huge benefit. Plus, we know based on research that meals cooked at home are more nutritious, and there's more satisfaction with some of those meals because the process of cooking, preparing and cooking a meal actually increases our satisfaction with the meal itself.
That's
so there's
interesting.
A lot of benefits.
I think at one time, you mentioned your son is 15, your daughter's 11.
Yeah.
I think even 5-6 years ago, they were helping you cook in the kitchen.
Yes.
That's kind of a fun thing.
I love that. So they don't do it as much now during the year because they're so busy with all their activities. Mm. But I do still have them help me pick out recipes sometimes. In the summer is when we really spend a lot of time cooking together. So they'll each pick a recipe every week that they want to be kind of in charge of. And then I'll help them with it, but it's their recipe that they picked. They're the ones making most of it. And I'll just sort of be like a consultant. And so that's really fun. They love that.
I have found some good recipes in addition to your website on Facebook.
Yeah.
There's some nice ones.
Yeah.
And they're portioned correctly and all of that. And they're not real hard to figure out if you're cooking for two people or four people. You can kind of create, fix those or adjust the portions. But is it common? Should we trust the many nutrition suggestions that you see on Facebook and other social media? Because I mean, if you ever, like, I'll go in and I'll look for a recipe, find one, and then I'm inundated on, what do you call the wall or whatever you call it on Facebook?
Yeah.
I'm inundated with all these different articles, you know, saying, oh, well, you should eat more turmeric, or, oh, you should eat more, you know, this or that, because you actually downloaded a recipe.
Right, right, right. Yes, because then you're in the algorithm.
So there you go,
algorithm.
So then
they know what you're interested in, and so they're going to just bombard you with things. So I think we all know the answer is no, we shouldn't trust everything that we see on social
media.
But
I'm not even sure what you can trust. It's scary.
It is scary. And actually, that's one of my biggest frustrations with social media is I do feel like I'm constantly fighting misinformation, which is really, it's difficult. So there's a couple of things you can do. First of all, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's kind of, that should immediately, when you see something, you're like, whoa, that's amazing. Or, oh my goodness, that's the next miracle, whatever. That should be a red flag, right?
Yeah.
Second, you want to make sure that the person that is posting it is credible. And that's really, I think, a big issue right now is there are these nutrition influencers all over the place that actually have no credentials. So you can, if you just spend 30 seconds just going to their profile and looking if they have credentials, that's a pretty easy way to kind of weed through, you know, some of the people who maybe don't really know what they're talking about. So that's something to think about. The other thing to think about is this the first time I've ever heard this? Okay. Mm. A lot of times nutrition science, we're not going to give a recommendation in a general sense until there's multiple research studies supporting that recommendation. So it's the if it's the first time you hear something, that's a red flag too. So there's a couple of things that you can kind of look for, but I think in general, we should be very wary about what we see on social media. I think specifically for nutrition, I think finding a couple of registered dietitians to follow, I mean, that's going to be ideal. And we all have a little bit different specialties. So maybe finding one that fits your specific concerns or your specific goals could be really helpful. But I think that's a good place to start.
But they need to have a credential.
Yeah, I think so.
I love it.
Yeah.
When we come back, I'm going to ask you this. How do you identify when people have motives for changing the way they eat in a way you believe would be harmful to their well-being? We'll be back with Jennifer Bryant on ABQ Connect. Hope you'll stay with us. Jim Williams with you on ABQ Connect. Hey, don't forget to go to klyt.fm, click on our page, go down to the Christmas Critter Campaign, and consider giving a Christmas gift to people that are in South Asia or in Africa through GFA World. They have an amazing they're raising money right now for Christmas Critter Campaign so that if you can help them buy presents, like say a sewing machine, this would put a woman who, let's take South Asia as an example. The Dalits in South Asia are considered untouchable. They are considered to be a lower class of individual that nobody pays attention to, and it's just part of the caste system that they have. But if she were to get a sewing machine, they develop all these amazing talents for making clothes and developing commerce for not only themselves but other people in their community. Chickens, goats, all of this contributes to their well-being and to them generating finances. So it's really an amazing thing. I think it's kind of a fun thing. You can go to our website, click on Christmas Critter Campaign. It takes you to a catalog of different things that you might consider giving. So just keep it in mind. I think it's always fun every year. I try to buy a couple different gifts for people. And there are some that, you know, you have to have some financial means to do, but there's others like providing a couple, you know, a pair of chickens or a pair of goats that are very affordable. So think about it. Might involve your kids in that process. What a fun thing and to do to help other people. Jennifer Bryant with Nourish Nutrition Counseling is in studio. Jennifer, I'm going to inject myself now. So let's say that I reach out to you through nourishnutritioncounseling.com, and we're going to sit down for our first interview. And how would you identify if I had motives for changing the way I eat that you think might be harmful? Mm-hmm. Because I don't think a lot of people think men have like eating disorders, mm-hmm. and they do, don't mm-hmm. they?
Yeah, I think it's becoming a little more common for sure with men. So first of all, I like to do sort of a pre-interview with all of my clients.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure that we're a good fit. I want to make sure that you're motivated to make a change, and I want to make sure that I'm a good fit for you. So I always, if somebody reaches out to me and they're interested, I tell them, you know, to check out the options that I have available. But then I say, hey, would you like to discuss some of your goals in a little more detail, just over a 10 or 15 minute phone call? So I do that if people want to, that's available to anybody. And then we can kind of decide if, you know, if it's a good fit. So then in our first visit, if somebody's interested in going through my Food and Faith program, which probably about 90% of my clients are going through that. It's included in all of my programs. So I do recommend it. I think it's so nice to have a biblical perspective as you're trying to change your habits. And I always tell people it's really futile to try to change what you do without changing how you think. So we kind of start about changing the way we think about all of it.
But the way you just phrased that tells me that you're not spending as much time telling people what not to do. You're spending more time telling them what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I would even say that I am not the driver of the conversation in that first visit. So I would sit down with you, Jim, and I would say, hey, it's probably pretty likely that you know what you're doing that's maybe not the healthiest, maybe not helping you take care of your body. Do you want to maybe tell me about what some of those things are? And let's think about some really practical ways that we could change those.
So I'll give you an example of something, just real life.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm playing basketball at the University of New Mexico, and we were told that creatine.
Yes.
And protein.
Yes.
And I think we were using whey protein, and we were using way too much protein.
Whey.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, way too much whey.
Yep.
There wasn't anybody guiding us. It's
right.
just like somebody said, this is what you should do. And so
right.
we did all this stuff. And I can't imagine that that was very good for us.
Right. So, yeah, I would definitely, I always look at like supplements and food with all of my clients. A lot of times supplements are one of those things where like we heard or someone told us we should be on this. And so we start taking it and we just keep adding to that list and we never get off of anything. And then by the time we're 50, we're on like 100 different things. Right. Mm. So I always want to make sure that I'm going through those with people, making sure that what you're taking is actually helpful.
Can
for
you
your
just
body?
Take supplements and forget about food?
No, but I do remember my husband when we first started dating, which was, you know, 25 years ago, he said, Jen, why can't I just drink Dr. Pepper and take a multivitamin? He said, wouldn't that be giving me everything I need?
And you kept going out with this guy?
I did. I know. Maybe he's listening right now. So yeah, we definitely talk about that. But I don't ever want to suggest a change to you that you don't have confidence that you can do. Because that's not really helping anybody. So I want you to feel like, oh yeah, that's not too big of a change. I do think I could do that this week. That's how I want you to leave every visit, is having a very practical, tangible thing that you can change for the week that you don't feel is overwhelming.
Are there things common reactions that a body has? For example, if you're eating a lot of sugar and carbohydrates, mm-hmm. does your body crave more of it?
Yeah, it depends on the person. My answer is like always, it depends because our bodies are so different, right? So like your body is really different than my body. So I do think the body does get used to certain nutrients. So if you are overdoing the sugar or the processed carbohydrates, it can be difficult to kind of shift that and change it to eat less sugar, for example. So I think that is a good example. So there's a couple of ways that I recommend trying to do that. If somebody is like really motivated and they're like, you know what, I just want to cut out sugar for a couple weeks, kind of do like a reset, that works really well for people when they're really motivated.
Okay, but I can't help but think about a contradiction. Not a contradiction in what you just said, but a contradiction in all of our minds. Okay, we're eating too much sugar.
Yeah.
So we decide we're going to go on sugar substitutes. We're going to, instead of drinking a Coke,
yes.
we're going to drink a diet
right,
Coke.
Right, 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 right.
That's not better for you, is it?
I think generally no. Again, it depends a little bit on the person, but we actually had this conversation in the class I taught this morning. I teach classes at the YMCA here in Central New Mexico, and we were talking about how as humans, we're always looking for a way to get that same satisfaction from sweets without the consequences of sweets.
I love that.
Right? So it's like we're constantly trying, like, okay, first it was artificial sweeteners. Now it's like, oh, okay, actually monk fruit and stevia, those are really better. But it's like we're having the same problem where we're craving these sweet foods that maybe aren't necessarily the healthiest for us.
Mm.
Right. So again, we're thinking about it totally wrong. We really need to change the way we think if we want to change what we do.
Okay. And I don't want to offend anybody, but I do think this is funny. So many people that I know that are vegetarians mm-hmm. try to make their vegetables look like meat.
Right.
Am I wrong?
Right. No, it's kind of the same.
Yeah.
It's the same principle, right? It's like we're trying to make the sugar taste like sugar without the sugar. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Jennifer Bryant, nourishnutritioncounseling.com. If you have some interest in talking with her further and getting details, you can go to her website. Easy to contact her if that's something that would be interesting to you. She is also a certified diabetes educator. When we come back from this break, I'm going to ask her a little bit about, can you eat and be satisfied and enjoy food when you have diabetes. We'll be back after these messages. Stay with us. I think now 8 years ago, I called Jennifer Bryant, Nurse Nutrition Counseling. I didn't know her. Found out that she was down the street at Desert Springs Church yep. and had done some counseling, nutrition counseling with a number of people and asked her to come on the radio.
Yeah.
And boy, you have just done so much to contribute to us, and I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Jim.
I think our listeners have been very blessed by that. Do you recommend that people get a blood test to see if they're nutritionally deficit in any area?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of nutrients that I think it can be really helpful for. So specifically vitamin D and vitamin B12. There's a couple of other ones that may or may not be helpful. Some of the other B vitamins maybe could be helpful. The one I always tell people is, because they'll get concerned, the calcium is on their blood test when they do a complete metabolic panel. And the calcium in your blood is really not a good measure of your nutritional status of calcium. So there's a couple that really aren't worth testing. And that would be one of them. And the reason is because your body does a very good job of keeping your blood calcium levels stable, and it uses your bone to keep those levels stable. So your bone density is actually a much better measure of if you're getting enough calcium.
Now, there are people that are not in my age bracket, of course. No, I'm just teasing. People old like me have different medications and things they're on, and sometimes that yeah. affects these nutrients,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it does. And so a good example, there's two really common examples that I think are helpful to share. The B12 is actually one. If you are on the diabetes medication or the PCOS medication called metformin, that depletes your B12. So the doctors should be checking that every year, but they don't always, they sometimes forget. So you can be your own advocate there and make sure you ask for it if you are on that medication. And then the other one is if you're on a statin to lower cholesterol, that can deplete your body's stores of CoQ10. So you can ask for that to be checked. And then you should also probably with both of those be taking a supplement for CoQ10 and B12.
Now, one of the things that you do sometimes in your counseling process is request people get genetically tested. What's that?
Yeah, I don't actually request that. It's an option if people want it.
Okay.
Okay. There's a couple of really cool things that doing a genetic test can tell you. Let me give you a couple examples. So there are some specific genes that actually tell your body kind of how to function in terms of nutrient absorption or metabolism or things like that. So there's one that tells you if you eat more monounsaturated fat, which is the fat that's coming from avocados, nuts, things like that, then you actually have a better chance of maintaining a healthy weight. Mm. There's a gene that can tell you that. So the foods that I'm going to have somebody emphasize that has that particular genetic variant are going to look a little bit different than maybe somebody who doesn't have that genetic variant. Another good example is like with exercise, for example, it can tell you if your body tends to gain strength better with strength training exercise or endurance exercise. So you can know which type of exercise you might want to lean a little bit more to. To doing.
So in other words, if you're naturally developing muscle quickly, say doing resistance training, mm-hmm. you might want to have a little bit of that, but you might want to emphasize more aerobic kind
right.
of things.
Depending on what your genes are saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. It helps me give somebody a little bit more personalized recommendations. So we still kind of follow, you know, kind of general nutrition science-based recommendations, but this just helps me be a little more specific with people.
What is GI MAP testing?
GI MAP testing, I joke, it's a poop test.
Oh.
So you literally send in a sample of your stool and it tests like 70 different variables in the stool. So they're looking at different bacterias, viruses, they're looking at inflammation. And so I always tell people if you're having any digestive symptoms, this is a good option to do, because if we can heal the digestive system, which we can a lot with some food. With food, we don't always have to do a prescription medication for that, which is pretty cool. Then we can get a lot more out of the food that you're actually eating later on. So it's a really good option if there are some digestive issues going on.
If you eat healthy, is that enough without doing some exercise?
No. So let me bring in some biblical principles to this. So I firmly believe that God made our bodies to move. And I think we can all attest to that. If we're sitting for long periods of time, we all start to feel it, don't we? We start to feel achy, we have pain, we get lethargic, right? So I think God made our bodies to move. And I think we need to recognize that. And we need to make sure that we're doing that in a way that takes care of our bodies, where we're actually doing something good for them. There's the other extreme where we can overdo exercise as well. And so I think we want to make sure that we find that balance.
I love that.
Yeah.
What are you teaching at the YMCA and how do people find out about that?
Yeah, the Y, I do classes most Monday mornings. And right now we're doing diabetes. We're doing diabetes for all of November because it's Diabetes Awareness Month. In December, we are switching gears and classes are Happy Healthy Holidays. So just kind of talking about some of the common things that happen over the holidays, maybe trying to prevent a little bit of that guilt at the end of the year so that we don't.
Now, do you welcome people with both type 1 and type 2?
Yeah.
Involved in the diabetes?
And actually, most of the people in my class maybe didn't have diabetes themselves.
Oh.
But there's a lot of other benefits of learning how to manage your blood sugar, even if you don't have diabetes, energy levels being a major one.
You know, I've heard some people say that if you have an overabundance, if you're creating glucose spikes, I guess from eating too many carbs, mm-hmm. too much sugar, et cetera, that even if you're healthy and not diabetic, you actually get spikes. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah.
And they liken that might even cause some of the issues that we would identify as mental illness in some cases because the glucose is so erratic.
Yeah, I think there is a huge correlation with blood sugars and energy and also mood. So yes, I would agree with that.
So most of us think of sugar creating lots of energy.
Yeah, it does for a short time.
For a short time, yeah.
And then we crash, right? And then we feel really bad. So yeah, so there's tons of benefits of learning how to kind of maintain more stable blood sugars, even if you don't have diabetes. But fun statistic, 50% of people over the age of 65 have prediabetes.
50%?
50%. And 90% of them don't know it.
How would they find out?
A fasting blood sugar test from their doctor.
Okay, so yeah. You got to call your doctor. How long do they have to fast?
About 8 hours.
And they would give them those instructions.
That's the recommendation, yeah.
So you would probably not eat from lunch the previous day, go in the morning?
Yeah, it would really just be dinner because it'd just be overnight. So really you just need to go first thing in the morning.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before you eat, before you drink coffee.
Yes.
Before you have all the sugar alcohols in your coffee.
Yes. And actually, caffeine can cause your blood sugar to go up a little bit as well, even if there's no carbohydrates or sugar in there.
We were just talking during the break that you and I could visit for an hour. I mean, there's a zillion things that we can talk about, including, like, is coffee good for you?
Oh, that's depending on your genes.
Is that right?
That is right.
I have not been affected by caffeine, but I am crazy affected by sugar.
Yep.
So all this leads to is that I hope you'll agree to come back and visit with us again.
I'll definitely come back. Yeah.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks, we appreciate you. Happy Thanksgiving. Probably won't see you before then, but looking forward to seeing you again soon.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.